This podcast examines mental health through the lens of video games and gaming culture. But remember, real life is not a game. If you do have any mental health concerns, always seek professional guidance. The content of this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not constitute professional advice. The opinions in this podcast are our own and don't represent those of any professional group or organization. We gladly welcome any feedback. And with that said, thanks for listening.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Gaming the Mind. I'm Marcus Tan, and I'm joined by...
Are you waiting for us to say our names? Yes, yeah. Oh, well, I'm Sachin.
Hello, and I'm Donald.
Hi.
Again.
Okay. So what have you been playing, Don?
I've been playing a bit of Catherine, which is a game originally on the PS3. I just came back to it as I also have it on Steam. So Catherine is a game about relationships. And the reason it's called Catherine is that it's about this character who is in a long-term relationship with a woman called Catherine, who is tempted to cheat on his long-term girlfriend with another woman who's also called Catherine. And the gameplay of it happens whenever you go to sleep. So that during the day, the game is spent in a bar where you can chat to other bar patrons, you can drink, you can do things like that. And then when you go to sleep, the actual gameplay portion of the game involves you having nightmares, where you have to chase up this very strange tower structure made out of cubes. And it's a puzzle game, as you have to drag and push and pull these boxes in order to be able to climb higher and higher up to the end of each level against a ticking clock. And often the nightmares will have, at the end of each stage, there'll be a boss who's chasing you, which will represent whatever the content of the main character's thoughts is. So whatever is particularly worrying him at that time. So for example, spoilers, in one episode, your long-term girlfriend says that she might be pregnant. So the boss, during the nightmare of that episode, involves a baby, a horrific-looking, you know, monstrous baby chasing you up the tower that will kill you if you're too slow at being able to climb up to the top.
What I'm drawn to is the story it takes the view of the male protagonist.
Yes. I don't find the main character of Catherine to be terribly sympathetic.
Uh-huh.
I find him to be incredibly passive, because actually the storyline has him never remembering the act of cheating, but remembering afterwards and thinking, gosh, I have to stop doing this. This is a really bad idea. But taking an inordinate amount of time to actually, well, you're basically taking the entirety of the game to break up with this other woman. And it's a tricky one. I'm going to massive spoilers to explain that what you perceive to be the storyline at the start isn't what the reality of the story is at the end. It goes very supernatural towards the end. Sorry, Sachin.
It is very strange, though, these sort of games which are commenced on a premise of you have to do something immoral.
Yeah.
And what makes a person want to be that guy?
Maybe I should go into massive spoilers and say that the game kind of chickens out. I mentioned that it goes very supernatural towards the end, but it actually does a bit of a cop-out near the end where you learn that actually the other woman isn't actually someone who's cheating on you. The
whole Cheating with you.
Yeah, cheating with you. What you discover at the end is there's this idea that the barman of the bar you're at is some demon who punishes men that are wasting women's time by killing them. And that the woman in this case is actually a succubus who is there as part of this idea to lure men so that they can then be killed.
Okay, but you get to the end and it's a relief that you've not done anything wrong consciously.
Yeah, so it kind of...
But at the beginning, the conceit is that, yes, you are doing something wrong. Again, I ask you, without going to this cop-out thing, why do you want to play as someone who's cheating on somebody?
He's not a likable character in my mind. Throughout the body of the game, he doesn't make his mind up.
Yes, okay, so you don't like him. Why do you want to play as someone like that?
I think in all media, you don't have to play likable characters. And I think it can actually be quite interesting. Often in a lot of media, the villains can be the more interesting characters, as Alan Rickman might say. Supposedly he said, I don't play bad guys. I like to play interesting people. So I think there is something interesting of confronting your negative behaviour and negative emotions. I think it can be quite interesting.
Yes, it's interesting, I guess. I mean, I think what your question is drawing on, Sachin, is the fact that you're not playing as a first person, you're playing in the third person. And you could. play it, as if you're watching a play.
Yeah.
Watching third person people. And that's when, I guess, you kind of divorce yourself from this person whom you're invited to identify with and think about whether or not your morals
and that's how
are the same
I,
or not.
That's how I perceived it, because actually the bits where I was in control, the gameplay bits, were not my favourite bit. My favourite bit were the completely non-interactive cutscenes between the gameplay where the story advances and I see what happens next.
Well, this is the thing about games. You can see it in two ways. One is that you are the character and you are the one making the choices that cause these events to happen, which obviously is constrained within what the game allows you to do. But the other is that you are merely facilitating a course of events which is already written, that you're not the moral driver of what's going on. It's like you're watching a film, but you're just inputting something so that the film continues to play. Okay. And you're looking forward to Catherine Full Body?
If it gets good reviews, yeah, I'd be willing to check it out.
Have you heard the controversy about Catherine Full Body? And in fact, the controversy around the original Catherine.
I have not.
And I've played Catherine back on PS3. And I love the puzzle gaming of Catherine. It's so good. But there is some controversy around basically all of Atlas's content, be it Persona, Catherine, games which tackle social issues, that it's regarded as, and is, transphobic. So you've got the character of Erica, who is a waitress at the bar in Catherine,
mm-hmm.
and she's a trans woman. And the game doesn't seem to take her very seriously. So she is constantly the butt of transphobic jokes within the game.
I must have been totally oblivious to this. I know that during the storyline of Catherine, she starts a relationship with one of your friends at the bar, and it never struck me that that was played for laughs.
And then she is also noted to have the same nightmares that men within the bar are having, when the whole premise of these nightmares is that men have the nightmares. And the fact that Erica's having them seems to indicate that the writers of the game would
that she's a male.
Categorize her as a man.
Yeah, yeah, even though she's supposed to be.
So what you're basically saying is that this evil demon is clearly transphobic in that he's categorized Erica
as being
worthy of punishment. Because bear in mind
you could blame the demon, or you could blame the writing, which is prevalent throughout all of Atlas's games. So Full Body takes this to another degree, in that there was controversy raised when the Japanese version of Full Body came out, and people saw that in one of the endings, and to sort of be as non-spoilery about it as possible, a character goes back in time to where things turn out the best for everyone, and Erica hasn't transitioned in that timeline.
Oh.
Which is to suggest that Erica's best outcome is a man. Now, since then, there's maybe been some things coming out about, well, nobody ever said that was the best timeline explicitly, but it's heavily suggested. But I think there's still something inherent in the culture over at Atlas that they don't really look progressively on these issues.
Yeah, it's very sad, isn't it? You'd hope for better.
Yeah. So it's got a tremendous negative backlash online, which I think is deserved, but
do you think this is something that they might change in future? And
well, so this is something that they're going to change for the translation. And,
oh, really?
And this came from the translation team and one of the English voice actors saying, "We hear you and we're going to do our best to rectify the bigotry." And they use the word bigotry.
Mm.
Their own team used the word bigotry. They're going to try and rectify it for the English release, or at least the international release. Now, what I wonder is, does that make it okay? Because say you were not wanting to give money to this game because you didn't want to endorse its views, but a different team, a localization team, fixed it. Does that now make it okay to support? Knowing that it's still contributing to the success of the original game, really.
I think people are entitled to their views. I think I would understand anyone not wanting to support the team. I would understand people who play the game but express their views to the team that this is not okay and that they should do better.
I'm on the wavelength that you should play what you want, but engage with it on a critical level and understand the problematic parts of it and try to understand why you enjoy it and what it is you enjoy about it and what it is about it that could be improved. That you should, obviously, if there's any content that you find troubling or you don't want to engage with, then you shouldn't do it in spite of that. But for people who say, you know what, I like 90% of Catherine and I want to play this game, but I don't like this part of it, I think that's when you play it, but cast your judgmental eye on all parts of it and what political message is trying to say.
Mm.
Yes, exactly. That's what life is, isn't it? You don't uniformly like all of something or dislike all of something. There are shades of grey. And it's just sad, I guess, that there are certain stereotypes. To the extent when this one trans person comes out, she's singled out and picked on. Choosing to analyze someone solely because of this one specific gender, as opposed to treating them as, in that sense, on par, equal with the rest of the cast, and not looking on that so much as kind of, this is a unique aspect of a character, that might not necessarily be a right way to go, because it's again singling it as an oddity.
Well, let's look at this description of Erica, just see if it rings any bells for you, okay? There's Erica, the most disappointingly handled character in the game. Even from her first interaction with the main cast, you see the questionable choices. In the scene, Toby is complaining about never getting girls, saying that he wants an older woman and mentions adult fun. Right on cue, Erica shows up saying, so did I hear someone call for me? Followed shortly by, I've got a nice pair of stiletto heels I know how to use. Because of course, a trans woman in an Atlas game will immediately flirt with the inexperienced, eager young man. Throughout the game, every major male character says things that are transphobic. First, when Toby starts to develop a crush on Erica, everyone starts to tell him that he can't date her. Before he asks her out, everyone at the table wonders aloud whether they should tell Toby. This, of course, hints at the fact that Erica is trans, and that the characters are thinking about outing her. In another scene, Toby declares, "Got rid of my V-card, boom." And Orlando looks shocked and concernedly asks him with who. Then Orlando looks clearly bothered by learning that Toby had slept with Erica. Immediately after that, Toby says there was something weird about it, after which Orlando quickly and nervously changes the subject.
You know, you reading this, it actually makes me think about the main storyline of Catherine's in a slightly different way. In that, when you get towards the end, spoilers, and the barman, his true identity is revealed as a demon, his explanation of why he does the thing he does, you know, I see it in a slightly different context, in that he explains what he's doing is punishing men who are wasting the time of women in their most, and he, you know, I think he uses the expression, their most fertile period. So there is this idea that women are being valued for their ability to give birth, which is interesting that it's seen as naturally a relationship must be a waste of time for, on the women's side, if the man is not actually going to help to produce a child. And also he made reference to the Japanese birth rate and talking about how it's very low and how this is basically a problem that needs to be solved.
I was going to ask if whether or not when he talked about being fertile, the fertile period, whether or not he was explicitly referencing birth. But if he's going to go so far as to talk about Japanese birth rates, then that leaves it relatively...
Oh, it was unambiguous, yes. That it was seen as that men should not be wasting women's time if they're not going to actually be committed and explicitly stating, you know, produce children. And it's interesting, I think there could be an argument made that that's not the only reason for people to have relationships by any means.
Okay then, what have we actually gathered to talk about today?
Well, I thought because the Momo challenge has been in the news recently,
yes,
I think it's worth a discussion because people do talk about Momo as a game. And thus we should address Momo within a mental health context, because Momo is this game that parents are scared is making kids end their lives. And so I think we should cast a critical eye on this. Obviously, at the time of us recording this, Momo's been acknowledged as a hoax within the media. But then that made me think about, where do these hoaxes come from? Why do they spread? And what should we worry about?
Yeah, it seems like there was a previous panic that was a bit similar in 2016 called Blue Whale.
Yeah. So Momo's not original in that sense. Blue Whale, I think that's what we acknowledge as sort of the progenitor of online panic regarding games and challenges that are causing young people to do dangerous things and their lives. But it goes back further, and I think what I'd preface this with is that even when Blue Whale was in the news, I never saw it as a game, and that was probably my first gut reaction to people saying, oh, there's a new game on the internet which is making children hurt themselves and end their lives, was that I couldn't see in what way it's a game. And if I see it more as cyber bullying or cyber grooming, then that's been going on for far longer than Blue Whale has been a concept. But if we talk about Blue Whale as a thing, that started off in 2016. And the original sort of seed of it was that there was thought to be a string of suicides in Russia, which a Russian journalist covered and attributed it to online groups on Russia's social media platform VK, and eventually publishing that around 130 youths had been enticed to end their lives. But on further inspection of this, that report was just not based on any credible information, like the number who had done it or what it was actually based on. But from this concept of the Blue Whale Challenge emerged. And no one quite really knows why it's called Blue Whale, because if you read the description of it, Blue Whale is not involved in any way. But the idea of Blue Whale is that you are contacted online over some form of social media, and there's two parties involved in this: the player, who is the participant, and an admin, who is basically giving challenges.
One a day,
and there's meant to be 50. You know, when we describe it now, it almost sounds like a copypasta, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like a creepypasta. Like, oh, you will be contacted in over 50 days. You have to do these challenges.
And it possibly, that's what it was.
Possibly. And obviously there'd be a threat. If you don't do these challenges, then, you know, we will hurt someone you love. We will contact your family, something like that. Which, again, just makes it sound like predatory online behavior and not a game. But, so these challenges start off innocently. Like, wake up at an early hour of the morning, something like that. Like, an easy challenge for day one. And then it builds up to watch a horror movie. And then the panic in the media was that the challenges then progress to making kids hurt themselves, you know, engaging in self-harm, and ultimately leading on the final day to completing a suicidal act. That was the idea of Blue Whale.
Yeah. Is it clear that originally that this was something that actually happened and not just a story amongst children of something that was said to have happened originally?
It's not clear that this ever happened. But this is the difficulty, is that once people start reporting on Blue Whale,
the real thing does happen. People copy the idea.
But then it's a concept that actually exists, and then people could act on it.
So when they call it a game, it's not actually a game in that we understand it to be a video game or a console game. And it's actually a challenge, gamified behavior.
The reason it comes into the gaming sphere, and that so many people within the gaming world come to discuss it, is that it does take place on mobile phones, same as you would play a game, or on the computer, same as you'd play a game. It does involve children who play games. And so if you were to construct a boogeyman for parents to be worried about what are their children playing, then classifying Blue Whale as a game seems to fit that mold of, well, your kids might be playing a game where it crosses over into real life and it makes them do dangerous things.
Yes. It links into the idea that I understand that has been popularized from various news sites that these figures, in this case Blue Whale, is a placeholder for people's fears, isn't it?
Yeah.
Alongside the fact that no one's entirely sure whether or not it actually happened.
Right. Well, let's look at one of the reports. Sky News reported in 2017, the headline, Blue Whale Death Game Leaves a Trail of Misery for Russian Families. And so this is how they described it. As UK authorities continue to evaluate the risks posed by sinister games such as Blue Whale, Russian families say the risks are real and they want the world to know the price they have paid.
Games are in quotes.
Yeah.
The word games is in quotes.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe even Sky News is not convinced that it's actually a game. They described Blue Whale as a teenage suicide challenge, or in quotes, death group, that began in Russia several years ago. Again, you see, they're not naming their sources, and this all goes back to the fact that the original report by this Russian journalist who said that there were 130 suicides wasn't based on very shaky evidence. Mm-hmm. But see how that grows into everyone accepting that this was a thing that happened years ago in Russia. With such groups, anonymous organizers, the article carries on, encourage participants to kill themselves after the completion of a set number of tasks. Civil society groups in Russia believe that at least 130 young people have taken their lives while playing Blue Whale, while reports of incidents and fatalities in places such as Ukraine, Estonia, Kenya, Brazil, and Argentina have also surfaced in recent months. That's how the media were reporting on Blue Whale at the time, around 2017.
It sounds absolutely terrifying, this idea that if you're a parent and you don't know what your child is doing online, the idea that they could be being in some way groomed to hurt themselves or even end their lives.
Mm.
I think it's understandable why there was a real worry at that time.
What that is setting up, and as we said, is that Blue Whale is now known to be a hoax. Immediately, checking online, there's been a lot of people who've looked into this phenomenon of Blue Whale and whether it actually existed. And, I mean, here we're reading that a professor at the Russian State University, Alexandra Akpovia, found that the administrators in this game, who were originally thought to be these sort of predatory adults, actually turned out to be like kids between the age of 12 and 14, probably just trolling. So again, playing into the hysteria and being built by the hysteria.
But is this, just my understanding, is this trolling in that it didn't really happen, or trolling as in they were trying to get other children to do things they shouldn't do?
To date, no one has confirmed any suicides to be related to Blue Whale.
Mm-hmm.
So what you get instead is reports that lack credibility, and then larger media building on that. But what happens when Blue Whale becomes a concept is that it can then be imitated.
Mm-hmm.
And say you learn that a Blue Whale group exists, maybe you'd start one. Or maybe there is a group called Blue Whale who are trying to do the same thing, like a copycat group.
So Sachin, would you be saying that there is a real fear that the actual reporting on such things could in itself be a negative force and may result in people actually doing such things? For example, you can compare it with the New Zealand Prime Minister recently following a terrorist atrocity in which a lot of people were...
But I said we should never talk about it. Because it's not worth bringing up.
But it's a good example of the Prime Minister
not mentioning
his name.
We shouldn't mention the attack. He said this is a topic we should never...
Okay.
I wonder
so
why.
What would be another good example of how
Joe
people
Cox's
are...
husband refuses to remember her...
The name of the killer.
And yeah, but I think that's a tenuous link anyway, because we're talking about copycats, not about...
But that there are copycats.
How does learning the killer's name help a copycat?
It does result in more copycats. Like, there's been a number of similar Islamophobic attacks in other countries, including the UK.
Because someone knows the killer's name?
Well, people do attacks and these nasty things for lots of reasons, but one can be the idea of infamy, of becoming famous for something. And so by showing that that's not a thing that will happen, that can be helpful in reducing the odds of...
Well,
but anyway, we're not
perhaps
talking
we
about
shouldn't
this.
Bring terrorism into it. Like, if you wanted to link it to something about copycat behavior, you could talk about the fact that after Kurt Cobain killed himself with a gun, copycat behavior was feared to increase after reporting of that in the media.
And we know that nowadays, for most media, such as on the TV, there are guidelines of how topics such as suicide ought to be covered. The idea that it shouldn't be glamorized, that they shouldn't demonstrate the method being used. And so I suppose there is a worry that if you romanticize or over-dramatize how the reporting of Blue Whale, how it's reported, could in some way, I think you're suggesting it could be unhelpful.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair comment?
Yeah. Although, again, this is the thing about copycat suicide behavior, is that it's unclear if it actually happens, and there was no spike in suicide following Kurt Cobain's suicide, certainly. Although the specter of copycat suicide means that media reporting is usually kept quite sober.
I suppose it's one of the things to be vigilant of, isn't it? Obviously, I mean, as much as we are not, as long as you can't confirm or deny whether or not it exists, I think the possibility is enough for me to say that actually, yeah, guidelines like that are sensible and should exist.
Yeah. But anyway, so the idea that maybe people were acting in the name of Blue Whale after reports of Blue Whale came out, I can see why that would happen. Life imitating art, life imitating hoaxes, and people trolling, trying to take part in it, trying to raise the hysteria.
I think also when bad things such as suicide have occurred, you know, people may want an explanation, and if that's in the media at the time, it's something that people might look to.
Right. And we got this quote from Delhi psychiatrist, which was quoted in the Indian BBC News. And this is September 2017. Dr. Achal Bhagat, who said, "People join narratives to explain their experiences. That is possibly why some children have said that they participated in the rumored challenge, despite there being no proof of its existence."
Yeah.
And that's more on the side of the participants, really, in terms of why some people might say, "Oh yeah, I played the Blue Whale Challenge."
And it's analogous to other cultural phenomena, such as recently there's this movement of the anti-vax movement, where people are very against vaccinations and stating erroneously that they're connected to autism. You can see why people can make this link, despite there being no evidence whatsoever for a connection, as the time where someone might be diagnosed with autism may line up around the same time of when those vaccinations may occur. You know, around
are you linking this to, say, someone whose child may have killed themselves and they're saying, oh, well, so they were on their phone at the time? And
I'm saying that they're both examples of phenomena where an idea can be very catchy because of some aspect about the idea, that it might help explain something, or that it might, in some regard, be appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, so this would be from the point of view of someone whose child has ended their life and they want some sort of explanation as to why it happened. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's definitely one thing, yes.
I see. Yeah, and then we have American skeptic Ben Ranford, who had researched Blue Whale and called it the moral panic du jour and equated it to Dungeons & Dragons controversies back in the 1980s, and said also that this is only the latest in a long series of similar moral panics and outrages shared on social media. The best antidote is a healthy dose of skepticism. Now, there have been arrests related to Blue Whale, including someone who said that he was engaging in Blue Whale and trying to lead people to their deaths. But again, reporting around this is a mixture of sensationalized reports, and it's unclear if, again, these people are engaging in copycat behavior or what. But to the extent that anyone's ever really linked any suicide to the Blue Whale phenomenon, it doesn't exist. And so it's safe to say that if not a hoax, because a hoax, I guess, is something that's perpetrated on purpose to fool people into thinking something's going on, it's certainly a conjured specter.
It's like modern sort of folklore being created, where yeah. a story has just been repeated and changed every now and again.
Yeah, I like that idea of folklore, because I guess folklore has its boogeymen in it as well, of things that you should fear. And again, they grow through
retelling.
Yeah. And so let's move forward to Momo, which is Blue Whale 2018/2019, because it came in two waves. I remember Momo Challenge being this thing that people were worried about last year, and then it went away for a while, and then it came back.
Shall we talk about what Momo is first?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's essentially the similar idea to Blue Whale, isn't it? In that it's called the Momo Challenge.
Uh-huh.
And people have been challenged to do increasingly, I understand, bad things going from, again, it's starting from the innocuous and ending in suicide. Do we even know that much
detail? Hoax. I'm not sure we even have the details of supposedly the mechanics of it.
This is the problem about challenges that don't exist, is that you can't really say what they made people do, because they never made people do things.
Because they didn't exist.
So we've brought up one example of an article of news about the topic from RTE entitled Just What is the Momo Challenge? So in this article, it states that the Momo Challenge is a new viral game that has been doing the rounds in Spanish-speaking nations for up to 2 years, and it now appears to be Ireland's turn. On the surface, it appears to be some sort of social media game, in quotes, crossed with urban legend. Users are presented with a set of challenges that get, quotes, more difficult, end quotes, as each task is completed and the game progresses. This game is not innocent, but plays on the fears and apprehension of some children and many parents.
So it sounds like Blue Whale, basically. Get your challenges and they get more and more difficult, and eventually it leads to something bad, presumably suicide.
So that's what was reported back in...
This was in February 2019, end February 2019.
Oh, so not long ago at all.
But it was updated that recently.
Whether by accident, dare, or invitation, a social media user engages with an account controlled by a character called Momo. Momo has been reported on various platforms, most commonly on WhatsApp. Once the user engages with the Momo account, a request is made by Momo to the user to complete some challenge. The initial challenges may be innocuous, but may grow threatening and request photographic evidence of completion. New demands may request users to self-harm or harm others and threaten harm to the user's family.
Isn't that just Blue Whale?
Sounds literally. So. I think with a very scary face.
Well, this is one of the problems with the Blue Whale challenge, was it didn't have a face. No one knew conceptually what it was, but Momo is scarier because the parents now have something to look at and say, oh, this creature is attacking my kids.
I understand. It's a face that was doing the rounds on a subreddit within Reddit called, I think it's r/creepy or something. However, it originally stems from a model, a physical model that was created by a Japanese artist, Keisuke Iso. And I believe it was originally put in the bin by him before it was so famous.
But it's interesting because he initially did have a platform to exhibit it in one of the Ginza shopping districts in Tokyo. And Ginza is basically Japan's Oxford Circus, essentially. Mm. So loads of people would have seen it. But even despite that platform, it didn't get so much attention. And it's really interesting because I understand from this article that his narrative of events is that he's like, okay, fine, it didn't get so much attention, so he put it in the bin. And then what he hears from it 1 to 2 weeks later is apparently his neighbor's walking past the trash and apparently is scared out of his or her wits, they don't say. So scared by seeing this thing to the extent that they apparently say she got a heart attack from it. And then again, fast forward a few weeks later, and then he apparently next hears of it on social media where it's doing its rounds.
Mm.
It is pretty creepy, I guess, to be fair.
The long hair makes me think of the girl from The Ring.
Yeah.
Keisuke does
The artist.
Yeah. He produces special effects models and cites his influence with like the grotesque and that kind of thing. So he is quite intimately tied into the Ving culture.
Yeah, I think that if that face did a...
jump scare.
Yeah, if that face did a jump scare on you, I think it would be quite freaky.
Yeah.
But looking at her face, I don't know, I kind of feel a warmness towards her.
There is the aspect of things, isn't it, with the large eyes, the kind of smiling face.
Yeah.
No, I don't feel that way. I think it's clearly been done for horror purposes. And
well,
it's...
the rest of her body is quite freaky because her arms go straight into bird talons and she doesn't have an abdomen or legs.
Yeah.
So that gets a bit freaky.
So the bottom half is basically like a chicken sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. But she is based on a... Well, you have to pronounce this for me. Yokai?
Yokai? Yeah. Basically a demon, essentially, in Japanese folklore. Yeah.
What is Keisuke's relationship with Momo? Because I don't think that she's meant to be hated.
No.
She's Momo as a character. It's meant to be, and that's not her real name, obviously.
It was meant to be scary, but in the way that any kind of horror movie creature might be scary.
But she has importance within Japanese folklore, right? Yeah.
There are loads of things that have been created from Japanese folklore.
Mm.
And this one is just, we're just talking about it just because it's associated with this real life event.
Yeah.
I mean, the narrative from the creator himself, I guess, from what I understand from this article is, I mean, it was just another one of his works that he basically chucked, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he's like, it didn't get that much attention.
I feel bad for him, really, because...
He was getting threats, wasn't he?
Yeah, God.
But imagine, seeing your art... manipulated and warped in that way. But we got a quote from Yuki Yoshida, who's a freelance writer and who writes books on urban legends and unsolved mysteries, about Momo, that she's based on Ubume, who is said to be the ghost of a woman who died during childbirth. And since Ubume functions as a symbol of death during a process of something so important as giving birth, he considers Ubume to be one of the most important of all Japanese yokai.
Interesting.
And thus he believes that the fear that Ubume causes is universal because of what she represents. If you think of her as a folklore creature, to be then turned into this sort of meme and hoax, it's quite disrespectful, I feel.
It's interesting, actually, because I think, in general, there is that feeling, actually, that Japanese horror stories, they do have that kind of culture of talking about horror stories, like, for example, what they call the Kimodaneshi, test of courage that they do in summertime, and all the whole mythology around yokai, the demons, and that kind of thing. It is basically built upon the power of suggestion, actually, like we've said, and basically bad ideas, like, for example, the fact that bad things happening in pregnancy. There's also this other thing about the what they call the karakasa, which is basically if people forget an umbrella on a train, that umbrella eventually gains sentience because it's a discarded object that eventually accumulates all the negative emotions of everyone else that walks around it. So in that sense, again, using these Japanese folklore does feel like it's built upon the idea of like resentment and the suggestion of sentience. So in that sense, it can feel quite real. And I think there's also the aspect of the fact that Momo, because the character has been referred as a mother, it's a mother hen, and indeed it's got chicken feet, as we've said.
Yeah.
So I think it projects that image upon people, and I can imagine, don't know whether or not this actually happened or not, but I can imagine it's been like, the initially it was portrayed as this mother hen who's like, oh, let's just do a few things, and then it eventually escalates.
Yeah, a lot of Japanese folklore is, it's incredibly rich and can be used in lots of media, including horror. Recent computer games such as Nioh use Japanese folklore extensively, including the demonic umbrellas is one of the enemies that you will face.
As far as that cultural element goes, yokai are celebrated, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, even the bad ones, even the sort of, let's say, mischievous or ones that bring out negative consequences, they are still sort of revered and
absolutely respected. Right. Yeah. Demon's not a absolutely correct translation.
No, I'm more using like my Western
beings. Yeah.
Supernatural beings.
But which is to say that, which is to say though that, like everything else in life. That Ubume, who is called Momo to us, is someone or a spirit who should have some dignity.
Yeah.
And probably is not thought of in the same way in Japan as she's come to be warped for the rest of the world. And it's actually interesting because they were talking about how she became this sort of cultural phenomenon in the rest of the world. Well, it didn't register in Japan last year.
Mm.
Like, they didn't realize. And Yoshida says that last year the hoax made headlines overseas, but it barely registered in Japan. But this year it did, because Japanese parents started picking up on the scare.
Mm. Supposedly he was getting calls from Mexico asking...
The artist was.
Yeah, the artist getting calls from Mexico saying, can we use this likeness for a film sort of thing.
Yeah.
And apparently he replied yes, but didn't get a response from that. From them afterwards.
I look forward to seeing the Momo film. I do feel sad, though, because so now he's destroyed Momo.
Yeah.
Because he felt so guilty about the effect that she was having.
I thought it was destroyed before.
No.
He binned it, but I think he's actually properly destroyed it now.
Yeah, because he actually had a quote saying, tell the children of the world they don't have to worry, she's dead now.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. But I feel bad because, you know, she didn't ask to be the... I'm speaking about her like she's real, but,
to be basically involved in what might be, if it's being used, cyberbullying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I say she, but we can talk about the artist as well. You never asked for this. And so having to destroy your piece of work because you've sort of recognized that it's become this horrible thing.
Mm.
Must be quite difficult. And so... let's talk about how Momo took off and why it took off and what it says about us as a culture.
Momo is as real as we've made her, because it's not actually a confirmed thing.
Because I think Momo especially took off when Kim Kardashian tweeted about Momo or Instagrammed about Momo, saying be careful about what your kids are watching with a shot of Momo on it. But just like Blue Whale... we've got no real reports, and UK charities have said this as well, that any child has actually been influenced to do anything dangerous because of the Momo challenge. And so this thing has developed again of UK news agencies acknowledging that actually this whole Momo thing was a hoax. It was another moral panic based on sand foundations, that there was nothing really there. That's not to say now that Momo doesn't appear in YouTube kids videos. Because she does.
Because it's gone from a hoax to something that has become real.
Yeah.
Because of the response.
Yeah, because if it's in the news and you're like, so let's scare some kids with Momo now and put it in videos. But the reaction to Momo, the panic reaction to Momo was severe. Police departments commented on Momo, telling parents to make sure that the kids aren't looking at anything Momo-ish online. School administrators were writing to parents. Media around the world were reporting on it. So it's this thing that's captured the imagination of people who want to protect children.
Yeah, it really has captured the public imagination. It's got that heady mix of new technology that possibly people in authority don't fully understand. It's got this very dramatic image that does stick in your mind and is very deliberately designed to be unsettling and not quite human.
But then who do we have to worry about actually being duped by the Momo hoax? Because it's not the kids, because kids haven't been taken in by Momo. There's no evidence of this yet. I presume adults have.
I mean, there is this idea that it's a distraction from actual genuine concerns or worries in the world. Yeah, because while we're just spending lots of time talking about and thinking about this thing that isn't really doing much in reality, when there may be actual genuine concerns online.
Yeah. I mean, parents should worry about things that their kids do online.
Maybe some good will come of it.
But it's misplaced. So basically, parents should worry about, are their kids watching inappropriate content? Are their kids talking to strangers who might be grooming them? Now, that's not to say that you should overblow that in your mind as well, but these are real things. A real threat to children right now is that YouTube kids' videos aren't very well moderated. Mm-hmm. And so you leave your kid with YouTube kids and they might end up watching a video which tells them suicide methods or contains adult content, or kids who make YouTube videos, and are they being watched by people for the wrong reasons, and are they leaving horrible comments on kids' YouTube videos? Things like these are actual threats to children, whereas the Momo challenge, which I guess represents all that fear into a single image and a single thing to be frightened of, wasn't the real thing.
And there is this idea that it may be popular because people may watch it, and if these videos are monetized, then there is money to be made from what's currently in vogue.
Yeah.
So it fits into a wider narrative, isn't it? I guess it has the immediate narrative of what people talking about her have made her, but also fits into the wider narrative of what it discusses in terms of internet safety and other things, which can be very real concerns.
Yeah. And so it gets warped again. You say about it being monetized, because then once Momo goes viral, people are going to make actual videos about Momo. Like, hey, yep, I'm going to do the Momo challenge, or trying to put Momo into videos. It becomes a hoax of a hoax, or a joke of a joke, or a troll of a troll. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is part of the whole it's only a meme culture as well, where everyone assumes that everyone else is joking, but then the joke becomes the culture.
And you could never truly tell. The problem is these things don't transfer very well without, you know, human beings, of what's sarcasm, what's a joke, and what's meant seriously. What's it called? Is it Poe's Law?
Yeah, Poe's Law is usually fundamentalist views are sometimes so bizarre that you can't distinguish them from someone satirizing them.
That truly good satire.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, is undistinguishable
because the reality is strange enough.
Yeah.
And so we've hit on Blue Whale and Momo as just these unfortunate hoaxes that build up in public consciousness as moral panics and create anxiety around people who want to rightfully protect their kids. But it does bring to mind a game that does exist,
mm-hmm,
and has often been accused causing players to end their lives. And there's been several tragic instances where a young person has ended their life, and it has transpired that they've been playing a game called Doki Doki Literature Club,
mm-hmm,
and thus the link has been made from playing Doki Doki Literature Club to ending your life. But let me put that into context. The most recent scare I saw of this was actually back in February,
mm-hmm,
2019, where a school in Indiana wrote a letter to parents warning them about the game Doki Doki Literature Club, saying that it encourages self-harm and suicide. So after the administrators researched this game, they notified parents as well as reached out to elementary schools in the area, saying that you should worry about this. And it was first raised to their attention because there was a conversation between one of the students who'd played the game and a counselor, and so they must have discussed this game and its contents, and the school staff must have decided to raise an alert. But it's not the only school that's raised an alert about Doki Doki Literature Club, and it's been discussed within a coroner's hearing about someone's suicide, actually. So there are certainly concerns have been raised, let's say, without commenting on how legitimate the concerns are.
I mean, certainly it is a game that has graphic portrayals of suicide.
Right.
And I think that the warning on Steam that it shouldn't be played by children or those that are easily disturbed is something I think is very appropriate.
Yeah, so have you ever played it?
I've completed it, yeah.
Oh, good, so have I. Yeah. So, well, let's get our cards on the table before we discuss it. Do you like Doki Doki Literature Club? Are you biased?
I definitely do have a bias, I would say, in that I played it, and just for me in particular, I did enjoy it. I found it played with expectations of what's going to happen, even though it does start by telling you, by making it clear that this is not all it seems at the start, it still does play with your expectations, and I playing through it, although I have to immediately couple that with saying that I don't think it's appropriate for everyone.
Marcus, have you played Doki Doki?
Never.
Okay, Don will explain to you in a second. But, you know, I think it's okay to like Doki Doki Literature Club, but I think this gets back to what I was saying, which is that sometimes games have insensitive content in them in terms of how they portray social issues. And you can still like the game, but cast a critical eye on the insensitive parts of it. And so I play Doki Doki Literature Club as well, and I thought it's a very interesting game in terms of some of its meta-narrative as well, because it knows that you're a player playing the game, and it messes with you in that way. But, and let's describe what Doki Doki Literature Club is. It's a visual novel, right?
So it's a visual novel where it steals a lot of tropes of romantic visual novels, in that it's all very garish and full of pinks. And it basically presents itself superficially as something very light and innocent.
What's the plot?
So the plot starts with a character, a male schoolboy, being...
You, basically.
You, full of young, attractive women.
I keep on putting you off course. What does Doki Doki mean?
So Doki Doki is a Japanese sort of onomatopoeia. It's meant to be the sound of someone's heart beating kind of fast, sort of Doki Doki.
Okay. So, it, so you know, the title maybe means, the title means something like a romantic literature.
Yeah. So it's kind of strongly suggesting some sort of romantic connotations by the word Doki Doki.
All right. I think that's all we need to describe, is that it is a sort of play on a romantic visual novel in which there are multiple characters who the initial premise would be that you're trying to date one of them.
And it very strongly keeps its cards to its chest at the start by being a very boring, banal, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you join the literature club and you do various activities. But then there's a halfway point within the game.
Have, for example, you're bored, things like you have to pick out words to make a poem sort of thing.
Yeah, so you're doing slice of life sort of activities, very sort of school activities. But then there's a halfway point within the game where one of the characters is portrayed to be severely depressed and ends their life. And it's displayed on screen graphically. You see them, you see the method, and you see that they've died. Further on within the game, there are also graphic depictions of self-harm. Mm-hmm. Again, graphically shown on screen with blood. And it's all within a horror context, really. It is a horror game, a psychological horror game, at least.
And part of the reason it's so unsettling and creates such strong emotion is that it keeps a little bit of the initial very twee and light aesthetic, but then it will play with it so that the sound will be out of tune, or they'll still have some of the twee aesthetic, but with these horrendous things on screen at the same time. So there's that contradiction, that contrast.
Yeah. So that's why it's scary, again, is that this is a game that looks childish, and kids have played it, and it contains...
pulls the rug under you. It makes me think of Doctor Who is something that scared generations of children because often the enemies would come from the banal.
I don't think it's the surprise nature of it. I think basically it's the fact that parents go, oh, what is my kid playing? Again, it's the same thing with Momo, but it's my kid is playing something which contains this content. And coupled with the idea that people have ended their lives and Doki Doki Literature Club has been linked to it. But if we look at that for a second, well, A, there has been no confirmed case, again, where Doki Doki Literature Club has been the cause of someone ending their life. I think we can say, definitely, there have been people who have ended their lives where they've been reported to play Doki Doki Literature Club. But they could have been playing a lot of things. It's correlation, it's not causation.
You say that, but I think I probably have a slightly different view in that I don't think this is content that...
Well, I get what you're saying. But suicide is a complex thing. And suicide doesn't have a single cause. And it would be very odd to think that someone would play a game in which suicide is graphically depicted and thus end their life.
But there is this idea of that culturally, the idea that something is more acceptable or could be a dangerous thing. We probably don't have the time to talk about different cultures and their perception of suicide and how that might be a protective or a precipitating factor, whether suicide is seen as something utterly unconscionable or suicide is seen as something that is the honourable way out of a situation.
I don't know where you're getting at with this.
Well, I'm saying that I think people's perception of what suicide means can affect people if they're vulnerable. And I think it's something that we do have to be careful about, I think. This is why I would be worried about children playing such a game that very graphically portrays such things.
Yeah, okay.
Or someone who's depressed. I would be very worried.
We have to be careful about depiction of suicide within media. We already know this. There are guidelines about it. And if Doki Doki Literature Club were on the TV, it would be harshly criticized for the way it depicts suicide and self-harm.
It probably wouldn't be allowed on terrestrial TV in the form that it is.
I don't know.
In that it graphically portrays suicide.
There's no law around it. But it would probably be... There's no law around it. So you can compare it to 13 Reasons Why on Netflix, which featured the character of Hannah trying to end her life, and it was graphically depicted, and it was harshly criticized. And Netflix, obviously, I guess, is an online platform, and so they don't abide by any particular guidelines for portrayal. So they showed this. They eventually added a warning after criticism, both before the episode and before the series, saying this, you know, addresses some very difficult issues. But the fact is that various media contain this sort of stuff. Horror media obviously contains stuff that is very disturbing as well. So certain people should avoid that if they find it triggering of certain mental states, if they find themselves vulnerable. So yes, I think depiction like this, and that's why we have guidelines of you shouldn't show suicide graphically, you shouldn't glorify it. Yeah, shouldn't show the method, shouldn't glorify it, all that kind of stuff. I get that. But to say that Doki Doki Literature Club tries to get people to end their lives is such a stretch from there. If we just look at some of the things that have been suggested about Doki Doki Literature Club, I think maybe what I'm getting at is that the reporting around it is very sensationalized. So, first of all, let's look at what the Daily Mail have said about Doki Doki Literature Club, claiming that, you know, the game sort of surprises you with its content, saying that there's no hints of horror. It's wrong. Doki Doki Literature Club has warnings at the beginning of the game on the Steam store saying it might not be appropriate for young people. The actual warnings are that it might not be appropriate for people of all ages, that it's not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. And the online content warning says that you should not play it if you're affected by any of the following themes: depression, suicide, self-harm, and abuse.
And it does tell you that this is a horror game, even though once you then start, there is the conceit that it is, you know, one genre turning into another genre. It does lay its cards on the table at the start.
And that wasn't just added as an afterthought after the panic of
And the other thing is that some articles suggest that you are made to feel responsible for the death of the character, which is not true. There's no multiple paths within this game. There's some minor different scenes you can see depending on who you try to date, back when it's pretending to be a dating game. But ultimately, the same character will always end their life, and the same character will always engage in self-harm.
I'm not sure. I agree with all the things you say, apart from the last one. There is this idea in terms of the conversations you can have that you are asked questions where no matter what answer you give, it will go badly wrong. I think there could be a feeling of, even though it's unfair, it's,
I guess,
playing with your mind to make you feel that you're somehow.
But I guess the reports, are saying that, you know, it's because of your choices that you make that you could end up allowing this person to die,
that's not true.
No. And then there's the reports that it's a phone game.
That just gives the game away. Is that the Daily Mail again saying that?
Yeah.
That gives the game away that Daily Mail is a terrible newspaper that don't do their work.
But this is not just about, like, oh, you're so wrong, you didn't even get the platform right, and it's a PC game. But the fact that they call it a phone game because they want to sell the fact that they say, oh, these characters call you at night and they won't even let you sleep. They badger you. Okay. It's not possible.
Clearly the Daily Mail has an agenda. And they're not very subtle with it.
Yeah, the reality of this game is you play it for a few hours, it finishes and it ends. They don't badger you, you're not sort of forced to keep up with them, and you just sit at a computer. It's a very short game.
It is a very short game.
So they don't become part of your life. And so many of these moral panics are about games which infiltrate into real life, right? So Blue Whale, challenges that infiltrate into your real life. Doki Doki, they call you and things like that. The idea of this, which doesn't happen. And yeah, so here's the description of what the Daily Mail thinks happens within the game, is that And we won't go into specifics because they were commenting on someone who unfortunately ended their life. But the allegation was that this person was contacted by text messages during the day and night, often waking up after putting his mobile number into the game. That's just not something that happens in the game. You can't be texted by the characters. They don't infiltrate into your real life.
It's not very good reporting at all,
but it's quotes from the father who may be concerned. And the father said, "It's free to download, but once you get into it, it will not leave you alone. The characters befriend and love you and give you tasks to do. But if you don't do them, they turn nasty." And again, this is one of these things of, oh, it gives you tasks to do.
It's not true.
It keeps on coming up. This sort of like this folklore of games that give you tasks to do. Doki Doki Literature Club doesn't make you do anything in real life. And again, it does leave you alone. And Daily Mail themselves linked it to Blue Whale and Momo Challenge, saying that they were all games that lead to suicide, which I wouldn't even call Blue Whale or Momo Challenge games. And Doki Doki Club is so different to those. Now, Don, I do want to get to your point, though. I'm not a Doki Doki Club defender. The portrayal of suicide and self-harm within it are pretty bad. I don't think they're good. I don't think by the standards we hold games to that it meets those standards. Artistically, it may have its reasons for doing that, though. And so all we can do, as I say, is play these games and engage with them critically. So that's Doki Doki Literature Club, a third in our series of games, which I guess I just want to talk about them in the sense of moral panic and media stirring things up, saying these games harm your children when the evidence is just completely lacking that they do. What we can say, though, is that disturbing content in any media you should avoid if that is going to affect you negatively.
I'm sure it is disturbing, but in much the same way that, I don't know, a murder scene in any other horror film or any other media would also be disturbing, and that's why these things have age ratings. I mean, to be fair, I mean, the fact, the kind of abrupt transition between genres, it's not a new thing, actually. I think it was most popularized in Japanese animation by this Japanese anime called Madoka Magica, Puella Magi.
Magica.
Was its full name.
Say it again, because I just said, oh yes, over you.
Puella Magi, Madoka Magica, the Madoka series for shorts. That was one of the series that did it that way, in the sense that, I think, again, like Doki Doki Literature Club, at first it looks quite pink, and it's just, oh, it's a group of schoolgirls coming together, and then they suddenly get magical powers, and then they're just running around doing schoolgirl-like things in a interesting life. But then all of a sudden, one of them actually loses their life in their magical girl escapades, and that's when suddenly things start getting very real. But then again, Madoka itself wasn't actually a pioneer in that. Like, for example, even stretching back even further, there's things like Sailor Moon. Again, a magical girl series that has, at times, touched on quite dark themes. So yeah, in that sense, that concept's not new, actually. So genre switching isn't new.
Yeah, so it's a common thing that this sort of seemingly innocent thing that then becomes a horror. So yeah, I don't think Doki Doki Literature Club is anything to particularly point at with concern out of that. And it does warn you as well.
I remember where I was going with this. No, it's just the fact that people who have watched these, of course the content might be a little bit disturbing in so far that it's, again, it's unexpected, it's jarring. But I guess, again, that's the point of the film. That's why they created this piece of art with that kind of explicit motive. And of course, I wouldn't recommend it to someone who, again, is disturbed by those themes of, you know, people losing their life.
Right.
And that kind of things. But I wouldn't recommend it to people who are disturbed by such disturbing content.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be a bit much to completely censor such media.
No.
Because again, that's thought policing, and sometimes talking about things, talking about the grisly aspects of life in such visceral detail can have its place. But of course, again, we are pulling it back to the original idea, which is the fact that kids have watched these. And again, kids, children, are of course more impressionable than the rest of society, and that's why I guess the panics have, in that sense, erupted from it. But all I take from these stories about Momo about Blue Whale, about Doki Doki Literature Club, is the fact that these risks are there and they always have been there. And I guess in that sense, the original message that society, that parents in that sense do have, in that sense, it's worth being a bit more aware on what they're doing online, whatever they are doing.
That's the right guidance.
It's sensible.
Right?
Yes, yeah. It's sensible.
So, I mean, Don, so you've already said this. People should be careful playing these sort of things in the Okidoki Literature Club. Mm. And I think that's absolutely fair. So what's our sort of closing guidance to parents who are worried about games that their children might be playing that might have a negative impact on them?
I think that parents should try to take some sort of an interest in what their children are doing in their life. And that would include knowing if they're playing a game, what that game is, and whether it's age appropriate. And I think it's pretty clear that Doki Doki Literature Club is not age appropriate for children.
Yeah.
It is not for children, full stop.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be played by children.
Let's separate that from, say, school sending letters out to all the parents saying this is a scary thing that will make your child.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly moral panic and also very self-defeating, in that if I was a child and that happened, you can bet your bottom dollar that's the next game I'll be playing that night. So it's not only disproportionate, it's also incredibly self-defeating and foolish.
Do you think it's fair to say that we talk about children playing age-appropriate things, but I think the key thing is parents should talk to their kids about what they're doing. Yeah, so absolutely. If your kid is playing something, don't assume it's safe just because it's the right age rating. Talk to them about what they're doing. Take an interest. Engage in conversation. What's challenging about it? What they find difficult? And talk through these issues. And I think that's the best way to make sure that they're not being disturbed by it. And if they are, that you're there to address it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it fits into the wider narrative. Again, like you said, I completely agree. Parents need to take an interest in children and what they're doing. And it's difficult for parents, isn't it? They're a different generation. They look at these things and they don't know what in the world are they playing. They feel a bit off sync. When they try and engage some kids, well, in their adolescence and their rebellious teenage phase, it's like, oh, go away, mom. It's like immediately becomes uncool when they engage with it. So it is difficult, but again, well,
there's no easy answers.
There is no easy answer. And I think, I don't think that should take away from the fact that you should still have an interest.
Sorry that it's all doom and gloom.
So thank you very much for joining us on another very interesting podcast today.
It's very presumptive. Very presumptuous.
Yeah, well, if you do
thank
say...
you for joining us for another podcast with Gaming. I'm gonna say.
If nothing else, it was a podcast.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
It's just saying less and less. Thank you.
Do you want to end by saying who you are?
No.
I was Marcus.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't Marcus.
This is going very well. Thank you. I'm keeping all this in, by the way.
You can have bloopers. You can have bloopers.
No. This is good. It's very human. Thank you for joining us today for a very interesting podcast.
I've certainly learned a lot of things, and it's provoked my thinking about these issues.
Bye.
Have a good evening, everyone.
Morning.
You're so presumptive that's evening.
Have a good time of day.
Enjoy your commute to work. You're not listening to us anyway, are you? Bye.
Shall we have pizza?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Someone say bye.
Bye.
There we go.